Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the webinar on Investment by Foreign Portfolio Investors in Corporate Bonds, Recent Changes and Their Impact. This webinar is being organized by Nishit Desai Associates. The speakers are Mr. Nischal Joshipura, Partner, Private Equity and Private Debt, Nishit Desai Associates. Mr. Ruchir Sinha, Co-Head, Private Equity and Private Debt, Nishit Desai Associates. And Mr. Abhinav Harlalka, Member, Private Debt, Nishit Desai Associates. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's discussion. Should you need assistance during the webinar call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Also, you can download our mobile applet, Nishit Mobile, which is available on the App Store for iOS device, Play Store for Androids, and BlackBerry World to access the current updates and videos. Please note that this webinar is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Nischal Joshipura. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks. Very good afternoon to all the participants who have joined this webinar. We will be discussing the changes which have been recently introduced by RBI and SEBI on foreign portfolio investors' investment in corporate bonds issued by Indian companies. As you know, the foreign investment in corporate bonds in India became popular post-2008 when SEBI introduced the debt listing regulations in 2008. With the collapse of Lehman, what we saw globally is the emergence of more and more debt funds as compared to equity funds. Lot of LPs who had invested in equity funds for India didn't have good experience with return of capital and the returns, and that's where they started preferring debt funds for investing into India. And the reason for that was that in a debt fund you keep on getting regular coupon, as against an equity fund where the investments were made in 2005-06, but they didn't see a substantial portion of the capital being returned till 2012-2013. So what we saw was more and more debt funds focused on investment in Indian corporate bonds post the Lehman crisis. The benefit of a debt investment versus an equity investment is manifold. First being the coupon on debt instrument is tax deductible for the Indian borrower company as compared to an equity instrument where the dividend which is paid on the equity shares is not tax deductible, and there is an additional dividend distribution tax which has to be paid. So the debt instrument is more tax efficient than equity instrument. The second big advantage of a debt instrument is you can get a security package which is not possible for an equity instrument for a non-resident. This is again something which has worked quite well, where a lot of investments, even the equity investments, were structured through the listed bond route, and a number of those investors are still invested in the Indian company and getting regular coupons from the Indian borrower company. The third big advantage is repatriation. In an equity structure to repatriate funds, there are restrictions under corporate law on buyback of shares, where an Indian company cannot buy back more than 25% of the capital in one financial year. As compared to that, in a bond structure, it is pretty much possible to redeem 100% of the bonds at one go. The fourth big advantage is there are lesser sectoral restrictions applicable to a bond as compared to equity. As far as the Indian FDI and the FDI policy and exchange control regulations is concerned. So there are a lot of sectors which are prohibited for FDI, but are still eligible to borrow funds in the form of listed bonds. So broadly, because of multiple benefits, we saw number of investments being made through listed bond structure as compared to equity structure in the last 4 to 5 years. From a regulatory perspective, the way the bond market started was SEBI initially had mandated that all the corporate bond limits have to be auctioned, and there was this premium that had to be paid for buying the bond limits. which again significantly got liberalized in the last few years, where an on-tap system was started, where any foreign investor having an FII or an FPI license can invest directly in the corporate bond issued by the Indian company. So overall, what we have seen is relaxation in the foreign investment in corporate bonds, with the biggest relaxation coming in a couple of years back, when the tax department or the Indian government allowed the withholding tax on the interest on listed bonds being reduced from 20% to 5% if the interest being charged is within the base rate plus 500 basis point limit. So overall, till date, right from 2008 to 2014, we have seen relaxation of the regime for investment in the corporate bonds. And this is the first time, recently SEBI and RBI issued their circular in February, where first time there have been some restrictions which have been introduced for foreign portfolio investment in the corporate bonds. So what we will be doing now is we'll discuss these changes with the other panelists. So Abhinav, let me start with you. Can you throw light on what are the changes which have been introduced by RBI and SEBI under the new circular?
Sure. Thank you, Ashish. So the FPIs were permitted to invest in NCDs without any restrictions on the maturity as such. Now with the new circular, which is the February 3rd circular issued both by RBI and SEBI, they have restricted investments by FPIs into NCDs with a minimum resident maturity of 3 years. So FPIs will no longer be permitted to invest in NCDs with maturity or residual maturity of less than 3 years from the date of investment. The other thing that has been introduced by these circulars has been clarifying that there is going to be no lock-in for these FPIs when they invest into these NCDs, and they shall be permitted to freely transfer these NCDs to domestic investors as well, or domestic or residents as well. So these are broadly the two changes that have been introduced by the circulars with respect to FPIs.
Okay. So typically what we have seen is whenever any new regulation is introduced in India, there is always this concern on whether the past investments have been grandfathered. What's your view on the existing investments or the investments which have already been made? Have they been grandfathered under the new circular, or a lot of clients have recently come back to us and said that we have signed the bond related agreements, but the closing has not happened. What happens in those type of situations?
So the regulations clearly state that all future investments by an FPI will be restricted. To that extent, any investment which has already been made will not be affected by the new regulation. On the second part of the question, with respect to those investments for which documentation has been entered into, but investments have not been made and transaction has not closed, those will be affected by these regulations, and it will not be permitted for the FPIs to invest into NCDs with a maturity of less than 3 years.
Okay. So let me move on to Richard. Richard, what, according to you, is the intent behind these changes from RBI and SEBI? And I think one of the questions which keeps coming up from the client is, as an FPI, what is my flexibility to sell these bonds to another FPI or to another Indian resident, whether before 3 years or after 3 years? So maybe it will be good if you can throw some light on that.
Yeah, sure. So I think let's, as Abhinav said, that FPIs are not allowed to only invest in bonds which are having a reasonable maturity of 3 years. Maturity, the way we look at it, obviously, is a form of redemption. So you cannot redeem the bonds, either in full or in part, prior to 3 years. If you look at QED, it's okay. And I'm going to touch on the FAQs for the clarification which came out a little later. But if you look at the February 3rd circular, it says the bonds must have a residual maturity of 3 years, which means it doesn't leave any kind of leeway for you to say that you could partly redeem, fully redeem, and it just says, and it uses the term residual maturity. So which means that it doesn't even align itself with the FCCP or the ACP regulation, which talks about minimum average maturity. This is an absolute residual maturity it talks about. if you go back to the intent, I mean, 2008, we came out with the debt issue regulations, you know, we came out with them. And the principle was that, you know, we had buoyant equity markets or whatever markets we had, or whatever buoyancy we had, but we had some amount of buoyancy in equity markets. But in debt, we really didn't have any market. And typically, you know, globally, whenever corporates want to raise funding, they, you know, one of the typical modes for them, other than bank funding, is raising money through corporate bonds, and that kind of costs you about 40% of, you know, the total debt needs. But in India, that market was only 4%. So I think there was a, you know, there was a need to bring in a buoyant debt market, and therefore to simplify this, and the idea was that just like equity, debt will also, the debt market will become buoyant, they'll be trading and everything. But, you know, as we've seen, more and more debt offerings started happening on private placement basis, and trading never really happened, especially in the private placement segment. It happened on the, you know, the WDM, you know, segment, and mostly these bonds were redeemed instead of being traded. So, and they became like, you know, structured debt instruments without any trading. So I think the idea somewhere that the regulators had was to ensure longer term capital. So you are committed for a longer term than just, you know, short term maturity. And to some extent, I would think that, you know, they also probably wanted, which is being the original spirit of SEBI, that the debt instruments should also be treated like equity. But, you know, if you look at these regulations, the challenge that I face is this, that the SEBI does not seem to be, or the RBI and SEBI do not seem to be encouraging any kind of trading. Because the circular says that all future investments, and I would interpret investments to mean both primary and secondary, so if any future investment by an FPI has to happen in bonds with a maturity of 3 years, and what it essentially means is that for every FPI, it can only invest in bonds which are having at least 3 years left, so therefore trading between FPIs then becomes that much complex because, you know, it's a kind of imbibe lock-in of 3 years at each time. And that, I think, goes probably against the spirit. If you draw a parallel, you know, to the government bonds very clearly said that there was a, you know, GSEC, there was an initial lock-in of 3 years, and that was bond-specific. Today, the way these regulations are worded, it doesn't seem like it is bond specific. It has become bondholder specific. And I think that is where it is, you know, with, you know, it is not aligning with, you know, with the, you know, with the spirit of encouraging, you know, trading. I think we'll you know, probably just cover our, the SEBI clarifications a little later, but I think that's at least my reading of the circular. And I think one important point is that when you have a circular and then you have got clarifications, and if the clarification conflicts with the main circular, the question is what prevails, and you would typically rely more on the circular than the clarifications.
Sure. And just to add to what Richard said, in fact, in 2012, when the residual maturity period for FIs investment in corporate bonds was relaxed from 5 years to 3 years, specifically there was a mention that the lock-in will apply only to the first FII purchase, which means that in case of a secondary transaction, it will not apply to the FII which is purchasing the bonds. This is in contrast with the current language in the FPI circular, which has been issued on February 3 and 6. And this is something which, you know, if there is a clarity, it would help the, you know, secondary market for the bonds. I think the second analogy which I can draw is a similar issue had also arisen in case of foreign investment in real estate sector, when earlier there was the 3-year lock-in, and the issue had come up that what happens when the initial foreign investor sells the shares of the Indian company to a new foreign investor, whether the 3-year lock-in will again get triggered or will it be applicable only to the investment, in which case if the earlier foreign investor has already finished 3 years of lock-in, then no new fresh lock-in should apply. So that's another analogy which is there, and there was no clarification at least on the foreign investment in real estate sector, but we hope that there is some clarification which comes with respect to the lock-in for this FPI circular. So moving on to the next question, Abhinav, I think a lot of lenders are worried about the fact that what happens in case of an event of default situation? Because once there is an event of default, there is an enforcement of security which happens, and against the sale proceeds realized from the security, the debentures get cancelled. So because of the EOD event, if the debentures get redeemed before 3 years, would this something be covered under the circular, or is this something where, you know, there will be a need to approach the regulators to get a specific approval? And the reason why this is a concern is already India does not have, India is not known for a good enforcement of, good laws for enforcement of security. There are challenges in enforcing the pledge of shares or the mortgage of the property. You have to go to the court. So already that process is very lengthy and very cumbersome. On top of that, if because of this EOD event and because of this circular, if again they have to approach RBI and SEBI, it's going to make it very difficult for the foreign investors to invest in the Indian bond. So what are your thoughts on EOD situation?
So with respect to circular, there's nothing under the circular currently which permits and redemption in the case of an event of default as well prior to a 3 year maturity. However, in case there's an actual genuine EOD which happens and the investors approach the RBI and the SEBI and it is backed by a court order to that effect, there's a chance that RBI and SEBI may look at it favorably. But having said that, as you mentioned, the process for enforcement in India is already pretty lengthy. So by the time the enforcement order, the order of the court is received, it might already be beyond the 3 year period, in which case RBI and SEBI may not have to be approached for that particular redemption.
Okay. So I think one of the other issues which a lot of FPIs are facing is there is some language which is there in the clarification on optionality that no optionality clauses will be allowed. Also one of the other issue is that under ECB regulation, the language is that the average maturity should be 3 years. As compared to that, the language in the FPI circular talks only about residual maturity. So, Richard, what are the issues which arise on account of this difference in various legislations and, you know, some of the open-ended language which has been used in the circular? Can you throw some light on that?
Yeah, so let's talk about the circular versus the clarification debate,
right?
And both seem to be standing to some extent, contradicting each other. So, if you see the circular, if you see the clarification, which is APDIR Circular 73, query C, the question that has been asked is, does the applicability of these guidelines on amortized debt instruments having an average maturity of 3 years and above, right? And the clarification that has come up says that FPIs shall be permitted to invest in amortized debt instruments provided the duration of the instrument is above 3 years, right? So now what does this leave us with? I think there are two or three points to be considered. The clarification does envisage amortized debt instruments. And it talks about average minimum maturity. The circular talked about residual maturity in absolute terms. So the clarification is aligning itself to the, ECB form of maturity calculation, which is on an average maturity term, which is, given a schedule paper of ECB regulations, and how do you calculate that? So essentially, amortized instruments or, debt instruments or part payment or part redemption of certain debt instruments prior to 3 years is possible, provided the average minimum maturity is more than 3 years, as per the clarification. The question is that is it allowed or should you really look at the circular only, which only talks about the minimum absolute residual maturity of 3 years. But the way if you look at it, in conjunction with one another, I would think, and I think keeping the spirit in mind, that probably, the average maturity should work. Although I'm aware that some of the custodians have been taking a very strict view and saying no no kind of part payment prior to 3 years will be allowed, but and I think there will be some amount of ironing up of these regulations that we need the regulators, but I think average maturity of 3 years should be, you know, should be possible in times to come. The other point is on the issue of optionality, and you know, can you you know, can you have an option to redeem the bond earlier? So obviously you cannot. I think the clarification is very clear, and even the language of it is very clear. I think they're both aligned on the fact that you cannot have any option to redeem the bond prior to 3 years. But the way I look at the regulations, it does not restrict a put option, let's say, on the promoter. So an FPI entity could have a put on the promoter, on, you know, of an Indian resident, and today only foreign investors need to be qualified as foreign portfolio investors, but any Indian resident can trade in these bonds. So an FPI entity can put the debentures on an Indian promoter, and that I think should not qualify as an optionality in the instrument, because it is really an arrangement outside the scope of the debenture redemption structure. But again, I think this is another point that we'll be probably taking up with the, you know, with the regulators, and we hope for some amount of clarity, because many custodians, again I'm told, are taking a view that any kind of put option, even on the promoter, would amount to an optionality of that instrument, and you cannot have any optionality on the promoter even prior to 3 years. So in situations where, let's say, you know, you want to be insulated, and you entered into a put option with the promoter, that if I'm not able to redeem the debenture, or there's an event of default, then I can put my debentures onto you. And even the promoter voluntarily wants to do that, that may not be allowed as per many of the custodians, you know, but that doesn't seem to be the spirit, at least from what appears to us from the clarification and the regulation.
And again, the fact that anyways transfer to domestic investors is allowed under the circular,
correct,
even before 3 years,
correct,
supports the fact that there should not be any concern on having an optionality on the promoter. However, as Richard mentioned, you know, the language is not very clear.
So the question there is that you are definitely allowed to sell it to an Indian resident prior to 3 years, but the fact that having an optionality, as in having a right, and the promoter having corresponding obligation to purchase, is that allowed or not? And I think even that should be allowed. But that's obviously an ambiguity right now, but I think it should be allowed. I think the third part is again an ambiguity, and I think, you know, which I mentioned earlier as well, is on secondary sale to another foreign investor. Should the 3 year period be linked to the bond itself, or should it be linked to the bondholder? So I think these are broadly, you know, three major issues. And if you again look at the clarification, you know, of query C of this February 6th circular, it says that FPI shall be permitted to invest in amortized debt instrument provided the duration of the instrument is 3 years and above. So it does seem to suggest this clarification, at least, is again a little divorced from the circular and the question which has been asked as well, because this seems to suggest that the duration that the, you know, that the 3 year time period, right, is linked to the bond and not to the bondholder. So therefore, if the bond itself has a 3 year average minimum maturity, in fact the clarification goes on beyond to say that the duration of the bond. So, but that's a little more wider, but even if you take a little more conservative view that it is 3 year average maturity, then also it is only with respect to the bond and not to the bondholder. So I think these are three or four issues which I think we need to take up and you know, get a little more clarity from the regulators on what are the final position.
Sure. I think the next question is that given that there are so many uncertainties and ambiguities in the circular, is there any better way to structure the investments to an FPI in the corporate bond? I think one of the structures that could work is especially in a situation where an FPI wants to exit by sale to another FPI. And in that situation, assuming that the residual maturity is less than 3 years, then under the current regulation, it is not possible to sell it to another FPI if a view is taken that 3-year residual maturity should also apply to the buyer SPI. I think in that situation, one of the things that the existing SPI can do is it can issue a P note to the buyer SPI instead of transferring the bonds to the buyer SPI, in which situation the existing SPI will continue to hold the bonds till the maturity, which is completely in compliance with the SPI circular. And on the other end, it will also get an exit through the participatory note funding done by the another SPI or another investor. So that is one structure which could be used, although there are challenges to this structure also, which recently we have been working on a lot of similar structures. But the problem is because these SPIs need to be located in jurisdictions which have a very good tax treaty with India for interest, sometimes we are not able to find these SPIs in appropriate jurisdictions. So for example, Netherlands, India has an excellent tax treaty for interest where the withholding tax gets reduced to 10% in a situation where coupon is paid by an Indian entity to the Dutch entity. As compared to that, if you go to Singapore, the interest withholding tax increases from 10% to 15%. Now, we recently tried looking for some of the SPIs in Netherlands, but we didn't find many SPIs in Netherlands, which is where the issue arises, that you have to find somebody in Singapore. And you have SPIs in Singapore, but then you are looking at an additional tax rate of 5%, assuming that, you're not able to get the benefit of the lower 5% withholding rate under Section 194LD of the Income Tax Act. So this is one issue which P-note holders are facing on to find the SPI in the right jurisdiction. At the same time, there is some uncertainty which hopefully should get clarified in the next couple of weeks when the budget is out as to whether the reduced 5% withholding tax rate, would it be extended beyond June 2015, or is it going to end in June 2015? I think that's also going to have a lot of impact on the future FPI investments into India. Another option which can be used is, sale of the bonds to the promoters of the borrower, which again, as Abhinav and Ruchir mentioned, sale to domestic investor is permitted even when the residual maturity is less than 3 years. So if the promoter is an operating entity or the parent company of the group, it should be possible to structure the exit in that manner. And the third option, which traditionally has been used a lot in the bond structure, is to warehouse the deal with an NBFC in India. And that's something where it initially started when in 2008, the FPIs were allowed to only purchase the bonds on the floor of the exchange. So what used to happen was the borrowers used to issue these debentures to local NBFCs. Then the debentures used to get listed. And then these debentures were sold to the FII or FPI entity on the floor of the exchange. So in that case, the NBFCs are warehousing the bonds and selling it to the FPI. I think with this circular, we'll see the reverse happening, where the FPIs will be selling to the NBFCs who will act as warehousing agents. And then after some time, the NBFCs will be able to redeem bonds from the cash which is sitting with the borrower company. Only problem which we have faced, again, recently in implementing these structures is that typically you will not need the NBFC to warehouse the deal for more than few days' time. But the problem is that not many NBFCs are willing to fund for a shorter period of time at a very nominal cost. So the NBFCs still need returns in the form of 1.15x or 1.2x. which makes it very expensive for both the borrower and the lender to have an NBFC warehouse the deal. So again, it depends from NBFC to NBFC, but a couple of NBFCs we spoke to, they had this issue on getting the returns in the form of multiples as compared to an annual percentage. So broadly, these are the three structures which we can look at. And one of the other things that we are also doing is we are going to make a representation to both RBI and SEBI on some of the clarifications that are needed on the circular. And it would be good if any of you on the call have any suggestions or any clarification that you need, you can send it across to fundsteam@nishitdesai.com. That's our email ID, which we can, incorporate your suggestions in our representation and forward it to RBI and SEBI. So broadly, these are the structures and the issues surrounding the FPI circular, which has been recently introduced, and we'll be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. We have first question from the line of Ketan Shah from Primary Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks guys for giving the insight on this circular and the clarification. Just trying to understand if, let's say there is an NCD issue with a minimum tenure of 3 years, right? And those NCDs are linked to some stock or some, so I'm talking about NCD issue in a real estate sector. And these NCDs are issued and linked to some stock purchase. What happens if, let's say, after a year and a half, 2 years, we are able to liquidate the entire stock and generate the cash in the SPV? So that time again, is it possible for SPV to go for an early redemption? In spite that, nothing is mentioned in the document.
So as per the current circular, any redemption before a period of 3 years is something that is not allowed without regulatory approval. In this particular situation, RBI and SEBI can be approached, but where RBI and SEBI would be more comfortable will be with situations like an event of default where, you know, there is a genuine default which has happened, enforcement of security has happened, court orders are there. In those situations, it will be easier and faster to get the approval as compared to the situation that you are talking about.
But you can structure it, and then you can
exactly. That's something which
you can have ways to kind of send this money out, loan, and look at that more granular detail. You can loan this money out to a promoter who can in turn buy that.
Correct.
Use that to buy some ventures, hold it for some time, and then redeem it after. Or redeem it simultaneously. But you need to look at it.
So for the borrower entity, it won't be possible to redeem before 3 years without regulatory approval. But as Richard mentioned, you can structure it, giving a loan to one of the promoter entities, and then promoter entity buys it before
3 years. Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a reminder to all the participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Naveen Gadoria from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thanks, gentlemen, for your insights. The way I'm trying to understand this is these regulations are from a FPI investor perspective and probably not necessary from a issuer perspective. And what I'm trying to arrive at is when the corporate who is issuing these bonds, when the corporate which is issuing these bonds, the investors could be FPI as well as domestic investors. Now, if let's say a situation where you have both these kinds of investors, if the company has to comply with the FPI investors' regulations and hence can't redeem or can't, let's say, to my friend's query earlier, where there is a situation where the borrower has cash and probably the stock is liquidated and wants to return money, or let's say the company wants to call for early redemption, the domestic investors who would have invested are at a loss. Also, probably in an event of default situation, the trustee would act on whose behest? If the foreign investors would have to seek RBI or SEBI approval and the trustee can't enforce the collateral till such time the approval is received, the domestic investors are at a loss. So the question would be that would the trustee or the company act as independently in the way they would have to act, and the money to the FPI would be returned based on RBI or SEBI approval, and hence the domestic investors are not lost, or you can't act in the very first place?
Yeah, so I think here in this type of situation, typically the terms of the debenture would mention that if the at the time of redemption the holder is an FPI, it will not be possible to redeem before 3 years. But if the holder is a domestic investor, then it should be possible to even redeem before 3 years.
Right, no, but in an event of default situation, like let's say what you explained earlier, where you will have to, before enforcing, you'll have to go to RBI or SEBI to enforce. Now, event of default has happened. As an investor or as an NCD holder, collectively you would want to probably proceed with enforcing collateral and selling. The trustee needs to act, and whatever be, you know, the mix of FPI investors versus domestic investors, if the trustee can't act because the money can't go, and hence have to first go to RBI, SEBI, and get their approvals, code approvals, and then act, then the domestic investors would be at a loss.
No. The trustee should hold a meeting of the debenture holders, and in that meeting, if everyone is okay, trustee will obviously proceed, and to the extent that the bondholders are domestic, those bonds can be redeemed. And to the extent the non-residents are there, there's a lock-in, there will be a lock-in. It is just like, it is just like whoever is eligible before can do it. The trustee is obviously, representing all of the debenture holders together. He will act on the instructions of the, of what is given as the debenture trustee. And if majority of debenture holders agree, and that's, I don't know the terms of the debenture trustee, but if all of them are agreeing, he will initiate the process. And to the extent possible, the domestic guys can get relieved.
So there is no need for the trustee to wait to pay the domestic debenture holder just because approval has not been received for the foreign debenture holder.
Right. So hence now what I'm understanding is that they can go ahead and enforce the collateral, sell it, because you may not be able to break the collateral, portioning it to the foreign guys, domestic guys.
Yeah, so any enforcement can happen, and the only thing which will remain different between domestic and foreign debenture holder will be getting the RBI SEBI approval for repatriation.
So the trustee would be holding cash pertaining to the FPI, as you think, in such
yeah.
such time.
Yeah.
And similar situation could also prevail, for a early redemption in case, the stock, for example, in the earlier question, has been liquidated
right.
at cash at the borrower's end. The borrower should be able to proceed, I presume, as far as the early redemption is concerned. Probably the FPI guys won't be able to get their redemption, but as far as the domestic guys are concerned, they should be able to get their
Absolutely. Yeah. For domestic guys, there is no issue. They can get the redemption even on the, even before 3 years' time.
Fine. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. Reminder to all the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. We have next question from the line of Francis from Pradnya. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Francis.
Hi. I just have one sort of general question. As initially highlighted by you, the past trend always has been that, the RBI is trying to encourage and relaxing the regulations as far as the corporate bonds are concerned. But this is sort of coming as a reversal of that trend. So the question I just wanted to understand is this some sort of a measure to protect the rupee or the Fed, kind of raising the Fed interest rate soon? Is it this some sort of a preventive measure against such kind of action from the Fed in US, or is this some sort of a long-term trend which we might see going forward?
I think two things. One is clearly RBI, SEBI, they want long-term investors in the bond market.
Right.
I mean, that seems to be the intent.
Right.
Although permitting it to be sold to domestic investors again doesn't, it goes against that intent.
Right.
Second thing is, I think one of the other things they're also doing is they are bringing it in line with some of the other securities. Like for GSEC, already there is a minimum residual maturity period. If you look at external commercial borrowings also, there is a minimum average maturity of 3 years. So at the end of the day, the difference, only difference between ECB and a listed bond is that the listed bond is a rupee denominated instrument and ECB is a foreign currency loan. So apart from the type of currency, the characteristics of both the instruments are the same. So they are also looking at aligning, you know, the provisions relating to various similar instruments so that there is no arbitrage which is available on one instrument which is not available with the other. Whether it's a long-term trend or not is something, I think the first indicator would be the budget on whether they increase the period for, you know, the 5% withholding tax beyond June 2015. So I think that would be the first indicator. But generally, I think in the, I think multiple times, Raghuram Rajan has always said that India needs to deepen its bond market. So generally, I think is that, you know, they want to encourage more foreign investment into the bond market. Maybe I think this is one circular which has come in the last 6 years. This is the first circular which is restricting something for the FPI investment in corporate bond market. And maybe it is for aligning it with the other similar instruments.
Is there any chance of this being reversed maybe later on, or there's no chance at all?
I think
it should be reversed.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, if you look at the way these regulations are, I think it's, you know, it's not retrospective, but it's definitely a very retrograde made move, because many of these debt funds establish themselves on the premise of NCDs and, you know, selling them over, and, you know, this kind of disturbs the entire idea. So I think there should be some amount of clarifications, and this clearly goes against the overall spirit of, you know, encouraging trading and having a bond market and all of that. So I think there should be some rationalization, which I think I would expect in times to come. And probably it will also have to align with the actual trading in the bond market, because today most of these bonds are actually getting redeemed and don't get traded. So I think the markets also have to mature, and I think there will be some amount of rationalization which will come in some time.
Right. I'm asking this because, you know, it's kind of critical for funds like us who are actually basically shifting our strategy from equity-based kind of investment to a debt form of investment. And the comfort which I was getting was during the monetary policy review, to one of the questions from the press, I think the RBI governor said this was mainly to do with the Fed and not really a change in terms of the regulatory environment. So that was the comfort we were getting. But based on today's discussion, I thought probably there's something more, so I just wanted to understand.
So I think, as Rachel mentioned, whether this should be reversed, it should be. But whether it will be reversed is a question which, you know, at least I haven't seen anything getting reversed in India. Whereas,
right.
You know, any draconian legislation also takes decades to be changed.
Right.
So at least I am not too hopeful of this being reversed. Maybe I think there could be more clarification which could come, which
right.
will be helpful for the FPI investors. But definitely this is not going to get reversed, in my view.
Okay. One last question. What do you think would be the impact on this, basically, especially on the listed NCDs on the real estate sector?
So I don't think this will impact much, because typically in real estate sector,
right.
the investments are made in SPVs. So these are all single project SPVs.
Right.
And the parent entity is typically the entity which has either multiple projects or has sufficient funds to buy out the FPI entity in case of the FPI entity needs exit.
Right.
So I think transfer to the promoters or the main developer entity
right.
Will be an ideal exit for the FPI entity as compared to you know, the borrower entity itself redeeming. And again, at least there haven't been many cases in the past
right.
which we are aware of where the default has happened before 3 years time.
Right.
Or there is a need to prepay before 3 years time. So I think a lot of these things can be structured through appropriate structures, depending on case-specific situations. But clearly, you know, on the face of it, these regulations look, very restrictive.
Right. Okay. That's all from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a reminder to all the participants, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand over the webinar to Mr. Nischal Joshipura for his closing remarks. Over to you, sir.
Sure. So thanks a lot to all the participants who have joined this webinar. As I mentioned, we'll be sending our representations to SEBI and RBI on this circular. And it would be helpful if any of you have any comments or suggestions or any clarifications that you need. If you can forward those suggestions or clarifications to us on fundsteam@nishanthdesai.com, we can incorporate in our submissions and send it to our BSM. So once again, thanks a lot for joining and have a great day.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Nishanth Desai Associate, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.